Hi, everybody. Welcome to Agent Insider. I'm your host, Andy Jewell. I'm joined today by Rich and Sam from Anchor Point Construction, our guests today. Thank you for joining me. I appreciate you guys taking some time out of your busy day to come and chat with us about construction and insurance.
Absolutely.
So just before we go in real quick, could you guys just give me a little brief description of what Anchor Point Construction does and kind of maybe how long you've been doing it and or how long you've been in construction in general?
Yeah, for sure. So Anchor Point was founded in 2018. It's a sister company of the mitigation company, ServiceMaster. Mm-hmm. So I own both of those two entities. So in ServiceMaster, we've been doing that a long time. And we saw a gap where, you know, we're doing a lot of demolition work in people's houses, but we weren't able to put them all back together. And that was being referred to other companies in the area. But had an opportunity in 2018 to bring on a crew of known individuals that we knew through the community of good craftsmen and estimators and things like that, and brought them into the fold. And that's how Anchor Point Construction started. So that was in 2018, and it's just been growing ever since. So, I've been in the insurance restoration and construction industry for a long time, since 2007. But Anchor Point itself started in 18. Yeah.
So you've been doing Anchor Point for about 6 years then.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then how long have you been doing construction, or how long have you been with Anchor Point?
I think it was 2021 mm-hmm. when I started, right? Yeah. So I'm the estimator. Previous to Anchor Point, I was an insurance adjuster. So kind of transitioned into writing estimates for a construction company instead. Working with insurance adjusters. So
you have a lot of experience then with kind of that whole claims process from a different perspective than maybe a lot of people in construction might have.
Yeah, it's definitely helpful because you understand what the insurance company is looking at and what they need to see to be able to pay and handle the claim correctly. You know, the information that the adjuster might need to be able to process things properly.
Yeah.
So it kind of eases that reconciliation process because I can just give them all the things they're looking for.
So typically, because we talked before, if you guys haven't watched the episode where I had Sam in here for talking about mitigation for the ServiceMaster side, we kind of talked about that at length about the process of we have a water claim, we have a smoke claim, we have a fire claim. You guys come in and how that works as far as the cleanup, the mitigation part of it. So Rich, you're kind of coming in to start writing estimates after the mitigation's done. Is that right?
Yeah. Recently I've started trying to actually go out before the mitigation takes place, just to kind of run the homeowner through what's likely to happen and how I've noticed if I come in after the demolition, if it's a big demolition, the person can have been very stressed through that whole process and not really see a route to everything being fixed again. So I do actually try and get in there before the demo now, if I can, especially on the bigger ones, just to give them that peace of mind of that there's a plan in place for getting it all put back together again. But yeah, most of my work will take place post demolition. I can get in there and you can see exactly what needs to be put back at that point.
So could you walk us through then kind of just that overview of like, hey, you come in, I just had a big water claim, right? So my hot water tank blew up and I got water everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so we call ServiceMaster out there and they're starting the drying out process. What is that? When you come out, what does that overview of that process look like?
Typically, whoever their mitigation company is will have run them through how water mitigation works. So, you know, checking where all the moisture is, finding out what needs to be demolished, what can be dried. But I'll kind of briefly run them through that again. And then I'll just kind of, you know, a look at what needs to be done. You write a detailed scope of work for the insurance company. Like, you know, we have 50 square feet of drywall. You know, we're going to have to texture a bit more than that to blend it all in. We're going to have to paint that. Cabinets, you know, what grade of cabinets are these? Get lots of photos so that we can demonstrate that to the insurance company, and then put that all into an estimate that is easy for an adjuster and a homeowner to read so they can see the exact scope of work. And then I would send a copy of that to the homeowner and a copy of that to the adjuster, assuming that the homeowner wants to use us at that point. We're going to make sure that they actually want us to go through the full process with the insurance.
So do they have to use whoever the insurance tells them to?
No. I can't speak for insurance companies, but my understanding from when I was in insurance is you can't require someone to use any particular contractor. What the insurance is trying to do is work out what's the reasonable price, what's the reasonable cost for this restoration. And if you go with someone who's outlandishly expensive, they might say, well, that's higher than it should cost. They'd need to justify their price a bit more. They should be paying enough that you can get. When I was in insurance, we always used to say we're trying to get the median price for the area. So the price that most contractors would be able to do this work for.
Yeah. I think there's like that concept. There's two misconceptions that I think I run into a lot as an agent. Mm-hmm. One is that people think that they have to, sometimes they think they have to use who the insurance company tells them to use. Insurance companies have preferred providers. Mm-hmm. For a specific reason, right? Like ServiceMaster, when they do restoration work, they understand we have to provide the moisture test readings. We have to provide all of this documentation for the file. So it's not because they're not a preferred vendor necessarily because they're cheaper than everybody else. They're a preferred vendor because we know they're going to charge a reasonable rate and they're going to provide us with the information that we need in order to settle the claim for the customer. So, but they could use whoever they want. Yeah. And like you said, though, that you could have people that charge outlandish prices. And then sometimes, and I saw this happen a lot we had a big flood in our area in 2020, I think it was 21, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rich was out writing that.
That was your break in to the industry. Yeah. Like, here you go. We just flooded half our county. Yeah. We didn't flood it, but half the county flooded and we have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of homes that had to be repaired.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing, that was his third week on the job.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
That trial by fire right there.
Yeah. I'm sure Sam was sweating heavily. Yeah.
He's like, I hope it's not just a cool accent we got with this guy. There was a lot, we saw a lot of different contractors that were doing work through that. And some of the contractors created this frustration between the customer and the insurance company, because the contractor's like, hey, we're charging X number of dollars. And the insurance company's like, that's not a reasonable rate. And then the customer's here going, well, that's what the contractor said. Well, you know, so then they feel like the insurance adjuster is like trying to screw them.
Yeah.
Right. Like the insurance adjuster's trying to cut costs for the insurance company. I'm like, and then I'm here trying to explain like, no, the adjuster's actually right. Like, we have three other jobs that were similar to yours that cost, you know, 30% less than what this contractor's charging you.
Yeah.
So unfortunately you just picked a bad contractor.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, so how does that process work? What does that look like as you're working with the adjuster on those estimates to where the customer doesn't get stuck holding the bag of like, I got to pay out an extra, you know, $15,000 or $20,000 because the adjuster wouldn't pay for it?
Well, we're very big on getting everything that we can pre-approved. I remember what it was like to be an adjuster, and the worst thing that you could have happen was someone would come out and write kind of a vague estimate, but it seemed like it was the sort of right price. And then they'd get through the work and then they'd send you in a whole bunch of paperwork that you could not follow, explaining why it needs to be double that or something like that. And then it's just a nightmare. You know, you've got a lot, you know, an insurance adjuster, they've got to be qualified in so many different things. it's very hard for, you just don't have time to read that amount of paperwork and try and justify everything. So it's really important to get everything pre-approved that you can. Some things you're not going to be able to get pre-approved because then, you know, we don't know that there's hidden damage in this wall or whatever. But you know, and sometimes there's code upgrades you have to do, or the electrician finds something isn't done right and he can't leave it that way or whatever. So there's things that you might need to charge on the back end, but as a rule, you want to get everything on the estimate at the beginning, get that off to the adjuster, and then have them tell you any problems that they have with that estimate. And then you can kind of go through and review it and say, well, that's reasonable. Oh, I made a mistake there, but this, they have a misconception of how this particular trade works. So then I'll send them an email back with all of the, you know, all of the things I've noticed with their critique of my estimate. And we do that two or three times. And hopefully by the end of that, we've come to an agreement on what's generally, it's a case of explaining why we're charging for a particular thing and why that's necessary.
So do you work with the adjuster quite a bit then yourself as the contractor?
Yes. I mean, that's most of my job, probably. Writing the estimate on the front end's pretty easy for me. I've been doing it for a long time. The bulk of the work really is coming to an agreement with the adjuster and making sure they're comfortable with what we're doing. They're aware of any potential, you know, if we're dealing with a granite countertop, I've got one right now, for example, where the initial adjuster didn't realize it was a granite countertop and they just wrote for a Formica countertop. They've approved enough money to get the work done, assuming that we can reset the old granite countertop without it breaking. But whenever you reset a granite countertop, there's a chance it'll break, and that homeowner is going to need coverage for a new granite if that happens. So I've got to make it, you know, document to them and explain, okay, you're paying enough money, but just so you know, this might break when we put it back in. And right now you've got it recorded as a Formica countertop, and that shouldn't break going back in. So number one, they're going to be confused if there's a broken countertop.
Right.
And two, it's going to be a lot more expensive to replace a granite than a Formica countertop. So, you know, just stuff like that, making sure everyone's on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah. Communication is really important because I think that takes a lot of that frustration out of it, where the homeowner then is sitting there going, my adjuster's trying to screw me or my contractor's trying to screw me, because they're mm-hmm. stuck in the middle mm-hmm. of that communication between mm-hmm. they're talking to the adjuster and then they're talking to the contractor, and the contractor and the adjuster not talking together mm-hmm. creates. And then, you know, also like, I mean, I always tell people like, I'm not a contractor, right? Mm-hmm. So a contractor starts telling me certain things, I'm like, okay. Like, yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, if you want to talk about policy coverages, I'm happy mm-hmm. to discuss, you know, endorsements and language about liability and things like that. Like, I'm happy, very comfortable understanding what those are. But you start talking to me about strapping and stuff like that, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So if you tell me this is what's got to be done, like, I don't even understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, and I think that happens a lot then. So the contractor's using maybe some technical terms with a homeowner who then is trying to re-explain this to the adjuster and is maybe not explaining it even completely accurately. Mm-hmm. And then the adjuster's like, that doesn't even sound right. And
yeah.
And so that creates this whole big mess mm-hmm. of communication.
Yeah. Homeowners will explain things to the insurance incorrectly often because they don't have that level of knowledge of the specifics of what's going on. So that's 100% accurate. That will happen more often than not. And I just think it's unprofessional. You know, I'm the one that knows what's going on. I don't want to, this is what you need to tell your adjuster. From time to time, there's information that they need to hear from the homeowner. So
sure,
I'll let them know if there's something that they ought to be communicating to their adjuster. But not, you know, don't hand them a script. You just kind of let them know, all right, maybe get an ETA from your adjuster on when they're going to be able to get this reconciled.
Right.
Something like that. Or let your insurance adjuster know that they can reconcile the estimate with me or something like that. Yeah, it's important to us that we have a good relationship with the adjusters that we work with, and that we're making everything easy for them to follow.
So do you guys see a big difference in how you do a job that's an insurance job versus just a regular remodel?
Yeah, we actually have stepped out of remodels for the most part, because insurance is just different. The way you run a project is different. The way you estimate a project is different. The way you budget a project is different. The way you work with a customer is different, right? So in a remodel, the nice thing about a remodel is it's pre-planned. You know, it's coming. You can put everything in place ahead of time. You can figure out timelines. It's all fairly known ahead of time. There's sure you're going to open some things up. And, just like Rich said, with supplementing, there's some stuff that might be unknown, but you have more time to figure out those sorts of things, in a remodel. But, with insurance, you're kind of tossed in the deep end, and it's like, hey, we've got a house that's torn apart. That happened last week. They would like to be put back together now. And,
right.
You know, Rich, is excellent at getting things approved as quick as possible, with insurance adjusters. And that takes a lot of follow-up, a lot of time that really is, free to the customer. We don't charge for that. It's just, that's just part of working in this industry. So, so we do that, as a, that's the kind of the value add to Anchor Point, as we go on a customer's behalf if they want us to. And do that. And some customers want to do their own interceding. That's fine. We'll provide the estimate. They can do what they need to do with it. That's totally good. But if they want that extra service, we can provide that for them.
Yeah, that's actually a really huge service that I don't think people really understand. So there can be great, and this is something I saw through that flood restoration time, because we just unfortunately saw so many different people working to get people back in their homes. But there are some really great contractors who do remodel and new construction, and they're really good. Mm-hmm. And they did great work. It was a nightmare on the claim side.
Yeah.
To because they didn't have that estimate set out with the adjuster to begin with. They didn't set that expectation of like, hey, this is like, we noticed you got formica and it's actually granite. We'll try to save it, but heads up, this could be an issue.
Yeah.
And so the documentation, so like, for instance, I had one claim where the house is beautiful. Like the contractor did amazing work in getting it restored, and they did some upgrades. And then it came back about $150,000 over what the original estimate was. Mm-hmm. And so obviously we're like, okay, well, let's try to get some money back for you. And the adjuster said, okay, well, send us the supplement request of what cost more. And so I was like, okay, Mr. Contractor, can you give me, you know, here's the original quote that the adjuster wrote, which is very detailed, right? Like line items, they have every room, everything that's done in each room is broken down with a line item, right? The exact estimates that they use. And he responded with an envelope that he gave me of receipts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know what to do with this. Yeah. Like and ultimately we were able to get a little bit of it back. Cause I went through and I took pictures and I had the adjuster go back and reinspect, but we were not able to get all of it back because we could not get, the contractor could not provide us with a detailed list of here's where the differences are and here's where that it costs more to do this than what was estimated. And then this was an upgrade, and you need to have to be able to break those down, right? Like if the customer says, well, I had carpet, but I want laminate. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But you need to be able to delineate inside of your supplement request, how much more did it cost to do laminate, or was that a savings?
Yeah.
Right. Because you have to be able to break down per item where the extra cost is coming from. So that way we can justify it. And I think a lot of people think, and you probably felt this, Rich, when you were an adjuster, a lot of people think the adjuster's just trying to not pay. Mm-hmm. But really, the adjuster's just trying to say, we'll pay what we owe, but I have to document it, because if I get audited, I have to show why I paid this.
Yeah.
I can't just be like, oh, that's a good friend of mine, so I'll write an extra $50,000 into that estimate, right? Like that's a good way to lose your license and get fired.
as a rule, the adjusters having to take whatever documents you give them and translate it into an Xactimate estimate or a Symbility estimate or whatever program it is that they use to assess claims, they need to take all those documents and justify them on the basis of the line items in that program. So contractor, and that's what we call unit pricing, where they kind of, they've averaged out what, how much, how long it should take to do a particular thing and what is the, you know, average labor rate in the area, multiply it out. And that's what it costs to do drywall in that area. And it's, it, contractors can often be frustrated by that because replacing 4 square feet of drywall in a closet is different than replacing 4 feet of drywall on the ceiling in the middle of a room with a heavily textured ceiling or something like that. It doesn't cost the same amount of money. But if you understand how unit pricing works and then you understand how the industry actually works, you're able to write it in the format that the insurance adjuster can read. They don't have time to translate an envelope full of documents right. into an Xactimate estimate. They just don't have time to do that anymore. So you're handing them a huge headache, and it how long is it going to take them to resolve it? You don't know. So it's important to be able to connect those dots for the adjuster. And the language is different. You know, those contractors will use different terminology for the work that they're doing than an insurance adjuster is going to understand. So yeah, having that knowledge.
Now, you guys got out of the remodel work because the process is different. What about the pricing? Is there a big difference in that? Like you're talking about line items and whatnot. Is there a big pricing difference in how?
There's different ways to bill things. So, you know, Rich is really good with Xactimate and Symbility and those types of programs. But when you're doing a remodel, typically you're using a different model altogether. So like cost plus is popular, or time materials billing, which is probably what this contractor was doing with the right. turning in all the receipts. So the difference being, in our case, while we do track everything on a project with receipts, it's all saved by job. That's very, very meticulous. So if we were ever needing to show that, we can on anything. However, we're not billing that way in an insurance project. So you're taking a model of using Xactimate pricing. You just run jobs a little differently. So not only from an estimating, but from a project management side, and then even down to your crews, how you're, you know, how you're not how you're doing the work, but just how you're documenting your work looks a little bit different. Right. So, what I found was, is that we were doing well on one or the other, and you're asking your teams to cross over and go between two very different styles of basically job documentation processing, and that it just doesn't go really all that well. Now, that said, we'll do small remodels for returning customers. But that's about it right now. So if somebody were to call and say, "Hey, I want to do an addition to my house and put a kitchen on," we're probably going to say no to that. And we have some good contractors we'll refer to that are just similar to what you were just talking about. Fantastic contractors, do excellent work. But they're using a different model than what insurance is. Versus we found our lane that we want to stay in and just do it really well. And doesn't mean that our guys can't do remodel work. They absolutely can. You know, from a construction quality of work standpoint, we could go do new construction if we wanted to. We could go do remodels if we wanted to. But we've found that we do really well in this area. And so we're just going to stay within that just to continue to get better and get more refined and make sure our processes are just dialed in. Cause then we're just doing the same thing every time.
Yep.
And when you're doing it that way, there's less questions being asked, and the training time for all of our crews is less, and the efficiency is greater, and the customer gets a better experience out of it. It's not so much the ability to do the work. So the work is very similar, right? Right. You know, you're putting drywall back in flood cuts, or you're remodeling a kitchen, or, you know, and our customers, we also allow them to make change orders as well if they want to. That's something that a lot of insurance restoration contractors, so like the repair portion, they don't allow customers to make any change orders. We'll allow that to happen. We'll encourage it, and we'll help them through that process. But the difference is that what a lot of the, like a normal remodel contractor will just write a change order for it. And then they're not, but they're not accounting, like you said, for, you know, if there's carpet in the room and they went to laminate or LVP or engineered hardwood or whatever, they're not accounting for the cost difference between the two. Whereas that's something that Rich, and our job coordinator, are extremely detailed and extremely good at addressing. So, we're going to take what the budget was for that and apply it to the other and then come up with the difference. And on our end, we're going to pre-set that up so the customer knows exactly what they're getting into. And so everybody's very aware and, on top of what are the numbers looking like, right? So if Rich writes an estimate for say $20,000 to do a repair and the customer's had carpet and wants to go to say LVP, cause that's the popular floor right now. You know, it might be a straight across. I mean, if it was really high end carpet and, the LVP numbers work, it might be a wash, or it might be a $100 or $200 difference, or it might be that they had, you know, had, you know, lower grade carpet, but want to go to a high grade laminate. Obviously those aren't the two of the same things. And the install is a little bit different in that. So, Rich, in conjunction with our project managers, are going to create a change order that's communicated clearly ahead of time to the client. They get to sign off on it. They get to see it in writing. And it's a really clean, easy process versus coming in after the fact. When you're doing this every day, that's an unacceptable way to perform the work. From my standpoint as the owner, I'm unwilling to let one of our customers get to the point where they don't know where they're at coming to the end of a project on a financial basis. It's not acceptable, because I don't want to be holding the bag at the end of that. I don't want to be that contractor that's, and probably for no fault of theirs, they did a fantastic job. They just don't do that normally. And that flood, I saw that happen constantly.
Yeah.
We actually came in and wrote estimates for municipalities to help them recoup it, because they had fantastic contractors that came in and did the work, but now they're trying to get paid for it. And so we came in and just doing estimate onlys to try to help with that process. Yeah. And you know, Rich did a bunch of that work for certain individuals. So, so we're good at that. And that's kind of our value add per se, beyond doing excellent construction work and repairs as well. But it is a very different process. And it's very paper heavy, extremely paper heavy.
Right.
So not only do you have to be able to put things back together well, you also have to be able to be extremely detailed in your accounting. And then in addition, you have to have this extra skill within Xactimate or Simbility, or now it's switched to CoreLogic, all these programs. Rich, when I hired Rich, I knew he was good at that. He was actually a trainer for the carrier that he worked for within that. And he'd done it for 13 years doing cat work and other things like that. So I knew he knew that really, really well. But what attracted me to Rich was because I was writing the estimates at the time, he was asking the right questions that some adjusters wouldn't. He was asking me, well, how do I justify this to my, you know, the cost difference? It's like, I want to help you. I want to help the customer. This is the information I need. And so he was teaching me how to write my estimates to make it work for the adjuster. And, you know, after we did this over and over for many years, I was like, hey, so I told him over and over, like, hey, whenever you're done working for insurance, please don't call anybody else. Call me.
So you worked with him a lot as an adjuster.
Yeah, that's how we met each other. Right. And so it was an easy transition. And when it was funny, right, because 3 weeks into the job, we had the flood. I had no problem sending him out on his own because we had a great relationship ahead of time. I already respected Rich greatly. I knew his quality of work already. So he was a known quantity for me. Right.
Right.
And I just said, okay, here's your new clothing. Here's your new car and, you know, go do great things. And he did. So,
Yeah.
So that was the difference there. Right now, you know, and we had already had the conversations of, okay, this is how it works going back together. How do you want me to write this? So it works for your paperwork side of things. And that's, I think, the difference too. And a lot of contractors will get hung up on, but that's not what's happening. I want to write an estimate for what's actually happening. And like Rich said earlier, that language looks different in that platform, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the process for reinsulating a house or, you know, for example, looks different and there's different steps involved. And if you're just reading that sheet and you're not seeing the descriptions behind it, that's not what's actually happening, right? But if you know how to write that estimate in the program and you know what insurance adjusters want to see, you start to tailor and shift things around to make them happy. Well, you're still getting that scope of work correct. And you know what, you're just kind of, you're translating it in a way that makes the insurance company happy, provides enough funding for the customer to get put back together. It's still accurate. And still the scope of work is correct and accurate in it. But you're working, you're interceding between the two to make it all work for the customer. And it's very, it's pretty complex, but that's what we do. Right.
Yeah.
And so
I think that part is really complex, but also the, probably one of the biggest, most important parts of a restoration after a claim.
Yes.
Because so like what I've seen, what I'm hearing you guys describe is you can, there's the technical side of like, can you install drywall properly? Can you get the plumbing done right? Can you get electrical replaced? Can you get new floors laid? Like all of that technical side of the actual work getting done is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there can, you can be great at that, but if you don't understand the process and the paperwork, the back end that you have to deal with the insurance company on, you're going to end up probably not getting as much coverage as you should. And you're probably going to be very frustrated with that whole process as the client will be, the homeowner is going to be, versus somebody that understands how do I need to present this to the adjuster so that way he can justify it. Cause it's there. Some adjusters are just jerks, just like anybody, right? Like there's good ones and bad ones, but for the vast majority of the adjusters, they want to take care of you as the customer and get you back to where you should be, but they don't want to pay 40% more than they should to do that. Because if they do, and this is something that I try to explain to customers often, like if we just overpay for everything, we're going, that's going to just be reflected in the rates that you're paying for your insurance, right? So if we're just paying just because, and we just write checks for whatever, and we never have any controls, which is how you want us to handle your claim, but you probably don't want us to handle your neighbor's claim that way. Cause you're going to, how much we pay out on the neighbor's claim is going to affect your insurance rates. Right. So we do have to have controls in place as an insurance company to make sure we're not just paying your, you know, somebody's buddy, you know, 20, 30% more than what the going rate is. But they do want to take care of you. Mm-hmm. Like they are trying to get your house fixed, mm-hmm. and they just need to have certain documentation. So I think maybe a good question for people to think about, like when you're looking to hire somebody to do restoration work for you after a claim, it's a good idea to ask that question. Are you familiar with insurance companies' billing processes? Mm-hmm. Because you can be technically great as a contractor, but you don't understand the billing process, and this is not going to work well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would step back even further and the technically great part, that's got to come first, right?
Right.
So, you know, from this service master side of the house, when we're out there, I think we talked about this last time, but when you're out there in mitigation, people are asking, hey, who should put this back together? And we don't force that one to the other, right? What I want to have happen is, I want our service master team to do an excellent job, for the client. And then we can refer Anchor Point to it. And then Rich comes out and meets the customer and says, hey, we can help. And these are the ways that we can help. And, but I want them to feel comfortable and make a good conscious decision to have the set, our second portion of things chosen. Right. I don't want anybody to ever feel like, oh, well, they're the only option. Cause this is what, you know, service master told us we had to do that. That's not the case at all. I want it to be a conscious decision. Hey, service master did a fantastic job for us here. Oh, you have a sister company? Let me meet them. I'd like to interview them for the project, the second portion of things.
Right.
And that interview part's really important. And I tell everybody that, you know, make sure that you feel comfortable with that contractor in your house, because service master's in and out in 2 weeks or less. They're not.
Yeah, right.
They're going to be there for a while.
So you know, what are some of the key things that you would say, like, if I was going to interview Rich, he's going to come out and I'm going to sit down and talk to Rich and say, okay, Rich, do I want to hire you for doing this job for me for restoring my flood damage? What are some of the questions that I should be thinking about talking to Rich about?
Well, I would start with the technical portion of things. So I'm going to ask how long they've been in business. You can do an online search of them. You can check LNI's website, make sure they are up to date there. This is Washington State specifically, right? LNI, mm-hmm. Labor and Industries has contractor profiles on there, so they should be current and everything there. So you can do some quick, that's low hanging fruit, right? But check that, make sure everything's there. Make sure there's a bond there. Make sure that they're insured and licensed and everything like that.
You can also see if there's been complaints against
exactly,
them.
Exactly. Totally. 100%. So, you should check there first. That's a good start. And that gets you to the point where, you know, okay, well now they're qualified to be a contractor, right? Then I would look at Google reviews. That said, there's a lot of fantastic contractors that don't have an online presence. It's totally fine. But if they're doing restoration work, they're probably doing a higher volume of work, and they should probably have some sort of online presence. So Google reviews are a great place to look, Yelp, something like that. Just to see what past customers have to say. And then just asking questions and seeing if they can explain it to you. I'm a huge proponent of, you know, can you understand what they're telling you? And do they appear that they want to explain it to you? And so that was another thing that drove me to, or made me want to hire Rich, is that he could explain things, and I would watch him explain things to customers, because we would be on a job site together, and I'm writing a repair on a roof, and he's discussing the claims process, and I'm outside with my tape measure working away, and I can hear him talk the customer through and explaining and educating, not just trying to get out of there, but actually caring about the client or his customer. It's our mutual customer, right? But but I don't feel in those scenarios, I didn't feel embarrassed, right? Some adjusters, I'll go to jobs and I'll be embarrassed that I'm standing there with them, right? Because of the way that they're talking or portraying the industry or how this process is going to go. And I feel like I have to stay there afterwards and undo what was just said. I'm like, no, that's not how we do this. They may have said that, but this is how we handle this process, and we'll work with that individual and we'll find a good resolution. But just so you know, I don't share that same mentality.
Right.
So sometimes we would have to do that. Right. Not all the time, but sometimes, but I never had that feeling with Rich. Right. And it's not just Rich, right? It's the production team that's backing him, the project managers that care, the crews on site that care a lot, you know, and you can kind of see that through Google reviews, and that's where you're trying to look for that production value, or the job, the workmanship value is where you're looking for it there. And then asking those questions about the insurance, how do they handle that insurance process? What can I expect? You know, what are timeframes are important. Lead times have decreased in the county a lot, Whatcom County specifically. But there was a time not long ago through COVID that most contractors are a year plus out.
Right.
So asking those questions are important. That said, with timeframes, that it varies a lot by the job, you know, and what materials you're going to need. If you're doing a whole kitchen remodel, that's going to look very different from, some damage in a master suite or something like that, but very, very different projects. Whole house versus one room, very, very different conversations, but the contractor should be able to explain that thoroughly and completely to you. So those are things that I would look for, and then ask around too, you know.
What should I expect then? So I could say, okay, I've interviewed Rich, I'd asked him some questions. He's like, oh, he seems to know what he's talking about. Google reviews look good. He understands how to work with adjusters and the insurance company. So I'm like, okay, great. This is going to be a much easier process. Hire Rich to have him to come in and do that. What should I expect from him doing the project management? Like, what's my role now as the homeowner? What's his role, in that project management?
Yeah. So with us specifically, once everything is approved and signed off on, contract signed, all that's been done, Rich kind of takes a backseat at that point. So he's always in the office. He's always monitoring those jobs, but he doesn't run them specifically. Mm-hmm. So we have an estimating team, which is Rich, and then we have project management teams, which are our other guys in the office that are actually running these projects. And so because Rich doesn't have time to run projects, he's time to do extremely detailed follow-up, detailed analysis of estimates. And that's, you know, his world is sitting right there.
Right.
He's also following up with the guys to make sure that what he promised the customer is occurring. That's a big, you know, that's one of his biggest concerns is, hey, if I said we are going to do this, we need to make sure we're going to follow through and do this. So, you know, he's checking in with the project managers on his jobs all the time, making sure that's all happening. Because the communication is important in internal office as well. So that's part of his job as well. But then it goes to project management. So the project management team will come out and meet with the client, walk through the job. Sometimes Rich will bring them along if it's a bigger project, just to get to know who would be coming in and putting it back together. We don't get to do that on everything, but on some we do. Or something more complex like rot repair, where we're looking at structural members and what we might have to do. And, you know, if there's permitting involved, you know, evaluating that a little bit more, the project manager is actually going to be doing the work so they can have a little bit more say on how that's written. But for a run-of-the-mill generic water damage, you know, hot water tank burst, that's not quite as necessary on that, right? Sure. So once the project manager jumps on the project, they're going to communicate directly with the customer. At a bare minimum, we do weekly updates on where the process is at. If the customer's living in the house, obviously they get daily updates because the guys are there every day working through it. But, you know, from a customer standpoint, they should be ready to make decisions on materials, like paint colors. They don't need to pick out the paint, but they need to pick out the color of the paint. They need to be able to pick out, you know, if there's cabinets involved, that's a huge process, unfortunately, of, you know, redesigning a kitchen, really, because oftentimes the kitchen wasn't just put in yesterday. So you got to go back to square one and repick cabinets. And oftentimes you can't get the exact same ones again. You can get similar, but you may not be able to get the same style you had before. Or, you know, we see it happen a lot where customers will have built-ins that are, you know, it doesn't happen as much anymore. We don't see that as much in new construction, but in older homes from that, you know, 70s through 90s range, we see a lot of built-ins in those homes. And there's not a great answer for that right now. You know, most construction is using box style cabinets. Well, that looks a little different and you're not quite as flexible with a box style cabinets. There's still vendors around that do built-ins, and we can certainly go down that road, but most folks tend to just go back with boxes because it's just an easier planning process.
Sure.
But they're going to have to meet with one of our designers to go through that process. And there's a lot of back and forth with all that. So planning to spend time with that designer, with our project manager, picking vanities, picking kitchen cabinets, picking tile, picking flooring, picking, anything like that, you know, there's some work involved with it. So
as the homeowner, I'm going to need to anticipate, I'm going to spend some time making decisions up front of what's the flooring that's coming back in, what's the style of the cabinets coming back in, what's my paint colors. But I don't manage the process of that all happening.
No.
Like I meet with your people, tell them what I want to do for everything, and then you guys just make it happen.
Yep. So like if you said, hey, I went to the flooring store and I picked out, this LVP floor, this is the SKU on it or the color code. We're going to go pick it all up. We're going to bring it to the job site. We'll make sure, that everything is set up, installed, the manufacturer specifications. All of that's done by us. We don't make anybody do anything like that, but we can't pick out the floor that goes back in your house either.
Right.
So, really just that selection is on the homeowner. And we have vendors that we work with, and we'll direct. So you don't have to, go through Google and pick a flooring vendor. For example, we have vendors that we have a good relationship with that, will get us stuff quickly. And we work with on a regular basis. So, should there be a delay, we know it's really just a delay, not something else going on, because we have a relationship. We know what's going on with those vendors, and there's some accountability there, right? Versus if we use somebody that we don't know, I can't stand on their word, right? Versus we've built these relationships. Also, all of our subcontractors are licensed, insured. We do the vetting process on them as well. So,
well, and I think that part's an important, like we were chatting about, excuse me, we were chatting about this the other day. You could hire Joe from down the road to put mm-hmm. new flooring in. And you're like, oh, this is going to be a little cheaper, a little bit faster, whatever. But then you have, and then the flooring starts to buckle. 2 months, 3 months down the road, you have, it's buckling or it's gapped or something. And I got called Joe and he's like, well, I don't know. You call the manufacturer. Sounds like a manufacturer defect. Right. And I call the manufacturer and they're like, well, we need to see what the process was for installation to make sure that it was installed properly. And I'm like, well, I don't know. So then I called Joe back again. Right. And then Joe's like, well, yeah, of course I did it to manufacturer. And I call the manufacturer back and they're like, well, we need this documentation. And I'm trying to call Joe and Joe's not now fed up answering my calls.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And he's moved on to something different. That whole process, when something goes wrong after the fact, you know, it could be an installation error. It could be a product manufactured error. Could be, you know, a whole host of different issues that could be causing it. As a homeowner, I'm just frustrated because I'm like, well, I had a claim. I was out of my house. We got it fixed and now it sucks and it's not working the way that I thought it should or the way it should be working. And now I'm fighting with all these different people and I'm just frustrated and I ticked off. I think that's something that people don't realize that that can be an issue because the manufacturer, if it is a manufacturer defect, will pay for it. But there is a process. You mentioned that, right? Like there's manufacturer installation requirements. And if it's not done properly, the manufacturer is not going to stand behind it and warranty that product. Yep. And so you have to be able to document the process and you have to, your contractor who I hire has to be able to stand up and say, yes, this is all done right. Your flooring failed and be able to give me everything to go back to Moen or whoever it is that we bought the flooring from to get new flooring installed and paid for.
Yeah. And that happens. We've had a bunch of those occur. Yeah. And what that typically looks like for us is the customer let us know what's going on. We'll actually reach out to the manufacturer through, especially when we use our own vendor, we have that local relationship to a national company. And so they're going to send their vendor out and we'll walk through the job together. Which puts the pressure off, takes it off of the homeowner because we're there to make sure that our customers are happy, right? We don't want anybody on the community being upset with Anchor Point or what's going on a job site. So we're very proactive in that, right? So we want to make sure that everything is done and the customer's happy. So we're going to explain, this is how we did the install. This was the nailing schedule that we used. If it was some sort of a wood product, right? Mm-hmm. This is how we did this. This is how the underlayment was installed. This is the pattern of the nailing or the adhesion for that. And we did it all per your manufacturer specs. It came in the box and we downloaded the bigger manual, gave it to our installer and he followed that. And it's pretty hard for a flooring rep at that point to be like, oh, you know, unless we made a mistake, in which case we're going to fix it 100% of the time. But to your point before, Joe down the street may not be interested in fixing it because he didn't budget to fix it. Mm-hmm. So when you're dealing with a more reputable contractor, you're at least hedging your bets that should you need follow-on service down the road, you've got a better chance of that occurring well for you.
Yeah. I tell people that all the time. I'm like, you can save $1,000 on a project and hire somebody to do it under the table or on the side. And that's all fine and dandy until it's not, right? Like everything's fine until it's not. And then sooner or later, something goes wrong. And then you find out like, okay, maybe Joe wasn't even a licensed contractor. He doesn't have insurance. He's at fault for what happened, but you're not going to get blood from a rock. And he doesn't have the money and he doesn't have insurance coverage and he's just going to disappear. And now you're left holding the bag. So what saved you $1,000 now actually cost you an extra, you know, $10,000 because you have to pay for that job to be redone. Or maybe he did it right, but he didn't document things and he doesn't have all the right information lined up. So that flooring rep comes out and can tear it all apart and go like, oh no, you can't prove this, this, and this. We're not paying. Mm-hmm. And now you're stuck because maybe it did fail, but you can't prove that it was the fault of the manufacturer. So you're still paying for it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's, I often is like, there's that old saying, right? You're penny wise and pound foolish. Mm-hmm. And, I think that sometimes we fall into that trap as homeowners. We fall into that trap of like, I can save a few bucks by doing this, but the headache that it gives you in where you now you're trying to be them to manage the whole project. And the cost in the long run can way outweigh what you saved up front. So it is super important that project management and to where you can just be the homeowner. You can just say, hey, I'm going to pick my floor. I'm going to pick my cabinets. I'm going to pick my paint colors. And I'm going to not worry because you guys are going to fix it all. Mm-hmm. You guys are going to manage that process. And if I have a problem, I'm calling you to come mm-hmm. back here and figure it out. I don't Absolutely. Know what's wrong. I just know my floor shouldn't be gapped yeah. or my floor shouldn't be buckled. Yep. So you figure out what's wrong.
Yep. Yeah. And that's what we do.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
So anything else that I missed? Cause I'm going to recap here. Well, let me recap. You tell me if I missed something.
Okay.
So kind of hearing from our conversation, I feel like if I'm had a claim, I need to understand that the restoration process is different than a remodel process. So when I'm interviewing my contractor that I'm going to hire to do restoration work, I need to ask them different questions, right? Obviously, I still need to make sure that they're quality workmanship mm-hmm. and that they know how to do the job. So that's one, asking questions, see if they can explain things to me. I need to make sure that they have a project manager who's actually going to manage my project. So that way I can pick my paint colors, my cabinets, my flooring, and then not worry about it. Make sure that they're licensed and insured, bonded. So that way, if there is an issue, I know that they have insurance that's yeah. going to be able to pay for this. And then I also need to ask questions about, do they understand how to work with the insurance adjuster and bill through insurance? Because it's a different process. Mm-hmm. The technical work may be the same as a remodel. The paperwork and the back end work, very different than remodel work. And so I need to make sure that they understand how to do that. And if they don't, then I need to just, and if I still choose to hire them, I need to buckle up, understanding that I'm going to have a lot more work on my plate in order to get my insurance company to pay me, because the insurance company wants to pay to get me back to where I was. But they have to have documentation for their files to show that they're not just overpaying and that they're paying a going rate.
Yeah. Yeah. And Rich could probably answer this better, but inside Xactimate, there's a back end to it all that you could only get. You can't get it out of the paper files that are provided. Mm-hmm. So Xactimate generates a PDF. And inside of that, on the backside is components of every line item. And, you know, Rich is very, very good at understanding what all those mean and diving in deeper. Because if it shows flooring, say it shows LVP, it's going to include labor and materials. And so, but you can't see on there necessarily all the time, you know, how much is it accounting for the actual material of the floor? How much is it accounting for the, you know, whatever.
The labor rate.
Well, the labor rate is one, but like, what about the glue? You know, if there's glue involved, yeah. you know, glue is expensive. Mm-hmm. You can spend, you know, on a big tub of it. It's not cheap. Or what about the nails? Or, you know, those are all things that need to be taken into account. So you as a homeowner, if you don't know all those really well, it's not, the goal isn't to make money on this. That's not the goal at all. Right. And the goal isn't also from our standpoint, you know, our moral compass on this is not to, like you said, go out and make a whole bunch of money to be that 30% more, but we want to make sure that we can do the work properly and that the customer gets what they had before for that price. That's Rich's initial estimate. Now, if we want to change it and go a different direction, that's fine.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the goal is specifically to put the customer back where they were a few minutes before the loss. Obviously, think of new materials, it's going to look a lot better,
right? So
depending on the house, right? It might be the same or better, right? Sure, it certainly shouldn't go backwards at all. But that's what the expectation is at that point. So, you know, if the homeowner chooses to do their own reconciliation, they don't really have the tools as well to get there. So, Have you seen that go well?
Have I seen the
homeowners reconciling, doing their own reconciliation with the adjuster?
No. I mean, if you've got a good adjuster, they should be able to communicate with a homeowner and understand how the software works and be able to do that to some degree. But the likelihood is the homeowner is not going to have the level of knowledge to provide the detail that the adjuster is going to need to justify things. You know, they could say, oh, this is more difficult than normal because this room's this shape or whatever, or there aren't cabinets that fit this opening or something like that. You know, maybe you can have some success getting the adjuster to just throw some extra money at it. But to get it accurate, no, it's and unless you're a contractor yourself, you're probably not being it. You know, you're probably not able to reconcile that to the correct amount with the adjuster. Again, it's like you say, most adjusters are good people that are trying to get their job done, but they have a limited amount of time. And when I was an adjuster, I remember there was a guy who had a T-shirt and it said, "I am an engineer, contractor, plumber, electrician, blah, 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 blah." And the joke was, because when you're an insurance adjuster, you're supposed to be able to do all of these things.
Right.
But realistically, you know, your knowledge has got to be very wide, but it can't be that deep in any one field because you just don't have the time for that. Right. So yeah. And a good adjuster is going to try and reconcile anything with anybody. But you do have to have that requisite level of knowledge to be able to do it properly.
Right. I think there's just a lot to be said for that, right? Like if you can provide the adjuster, here's why I'm asking for this, right? And here's what I need. I was talking to someone that was an auto claim, so slightly different, but I told them the same thing. They were disputing the value of their vehicle. And I said, that's fine. We can dispute this. I said, I did a quick Google search. I found, you know, three similar vehicles. None of them are going to be exactly the same, but they're very similar in the ballpark for mileage. It sounds to me like the adjuster's offering you a reasonable offer for the vehicle. If you don't feel like it is, you just need to find me three vehicles in your area that are similar, and we can provide that information to say, this is why we want more money. We can't just say we want more money, right? Like you need to provide something to show this is why I need more money to fix my house. And when we can do that, if we provide the right information to the adjuster, they're not going to fight you on it. They're going to pay it.
Yeah.
It's just, you have to actually provide the information. If the adjuster says, hey, we think this is $30,000 to repair your kitchen, and here's a, you know, 25 page estimate that I came up with to come up with this $30,000, and you just look at it and go, oh, I need 37,000. And he's like, okay, why? And you're like, well, because it's going to cost that much.
Yeah.
That's not going to help you. Now you're going to be frustrated versus like you have somebody, a project manager or an estimator who understands that 25 or 30 page estimate that the adjuster sent and can then pull it apart and go, well, highlight this area, this area, and this area. These are under bid for this area, for our area, or to your point, it looks like you accidentally listed Formica countertops instead of granite countertops. Mm. Like those sort of things are going to be the night and day difference of how that homeowner is going to experience a claim.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a good example from just like 2 weeks ago, we had I just watched from the background, right? But I watched an exchange with Rich and an adjuster, and the adjuster had accidentally backed out the material cost in a line item. So, but he had left some other components in it. So there's still a dollar amount associated. So if you weren't looking really closely, you would have never seen it, right? But Rich, being as he lives in that system, is like, send him an email back. Hey, just friendly heads up, you accidentally forgot to add the $4 a foot or whatever it was to this line item. So, you know, our estimates are the same. We have the same line items in there. You just missed that component of it. And if you re-add that $4 a foot in, we'll be at the same place. And so we're not far off. But if you are a homeowner or a contractor that doesn't work with that regularly, you're like, man, there's like $4,000 difference. I don't know where that's at. Throw up your hands and whatever, but you know, we're good at finding those things. Cause it's there, you know, the information's there. You just got to go look and, so that's a good example of that as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You could definitely see the value. And I've experienced this from some of our customers that have used Anchor Point, is the difference of just the ease of business for the customer, right? Like at the end of the day, we don't care about the adjuster, right? Like who cares about the adjuster? He's his own problem. Hopefully no adjusters watch this. But from the customer standpoint, it matters. And so when you guys have been able to work on jobs, I don't have those same frustrations for the customer. Like they're not calling me angry that the adjuster's not paying for stuff, because it's getting paid, right? It's just, you guys are providing the right information. So big key. I think that's probably what I would say I would take away, is because I think everyone understands that I'm trying to find good quality, but I think a lot of times people don't think about taking that next step to find out, can you work with adjusters, or do you understand how to work with adjusters? And if you do, that's great. You're going to have a much better claims experience. If you don't, and you still choose to hire that contractor, that's okay, but you should buckle up and just understand you're going to have to do a lot more footwork, and there's probably going to be a lot more back and forth and some frustration that goes through there. Not to say you still can't work out, but you're going to have a lot more work as the homeowner than if you hire someone who just understands that process.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So Rich, I asked Sam this last time, so he got off. And I don't know if you watched the full episode we did with Sam. If you did, you know what my question will be. If you didn't, then you're just going to be caught off guard, which is cool. if you could pass one thing on to your kids or grandkids, piece of advice, it could be business, it could just be life, but like the thing that you think would be like the most important thing, what would it be that you would say that you would want them to know?
Okay. Well, there's a lot of things, right? One thing that I carry with me a lot of the time is I don't really think there are bad people. Generally, if I find someone's adversarial or difficult to deal with, it's not because they're bad or they're trying to make my life difficult. It's because they don't have the same information that I have. They've got a different perspective. They've got something else that, is driving them, or the something. So there's some fundamental information that we have that's different. And life is a lot easier if you can look at that and try and figure out how to fix that problem rather than get frustrated with the person. And I get frustrated with people, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But being able to work with them and realize they're not there to hurt you, they're there to serve themselves, and how can you help them help you, and that kind of stuff. I would boil that down into a neat little bundle if I could, but it's probably Marcus Aurelius or someone already did that. So
that's a big statement that you made. So if I see if I can understand it, I'll try to regurgitate it back to you. So you're saying that it's not that the people are bad for the most part. It's that they have a different understanding of the situation than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need to help them understand where I'm coming from, make sure that they have the right information. And then sometimes, because a lot of people are self-serving, try to help them see how helping me helps them.
Well, yeah. And more just how to help everyone, right? They need something. I need something. The customer needs something. Whatever the arrangement is, how do we help everybody? And then generally that's the way forward, I find. And that's how we approach it. So,
okay. So make sure everybody try to just don't assume that somebody's just a dummy or a jerk or, trying to be mean, but rather assume that they just don't have all of the right information or all of the information that I have.
Yeah.
And I'm going to share information, so that way we can try to find a path forward working together
rather than just butting heads all the time.
Rather than trying to run somebody else over.
Right.
I like that. Try to find a partnership of a path forward rather than just trying to strong arm somebody into something.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys for taking the time, for joining me. We should put for Anchor Point, what's the best way for someone, if somebody's interested, and they want to they have a claim, they have some damage, they're in Whatcom, Skagit County here in Washington State, and they want to contact, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you guys?
A quick Google search is easy. Pop up right away on there.
Okay.
Phone calls are the best. You know, we want to talk to you and we want to come look at it. We're not interested in guessing on things over the phone. We really want to meet you, walk through things with you. We're not a touchless type of a situation. We want to get in and see what's going on and spend time with you.
So Google Anchor Point, get their phone number, give them a call.
Yep.
Schedule an appointment.
Yep.
Rich will come out, share some wise advice for life, and then put together that estimate for you.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us today. If you have questions that are follow-ups, or if you have a suggestion or a topic that you want to hear on the podcast in the future episodes, you can email me at theagentinsider@gmail.com. That's theagentinsider@gmail.com. Thanks so much, guys. Have a great weekend.